Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
Hi, this is James Meredith, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph on Davis Cup weekend. I'm very happy to say we've just been introduced by James Meredith, who is one of our Kickstarter backers. Thank you very much for your support, James, and to everybody who has helped the Tennis Podcast to be in 2018. We've already had 16 editions of The Daily Show during the Australian Open. Most of those were with Catherine Whittaker. She's not around at the moment. Why? Because she's just gone off to Korea in Pyeongchang to cover the Winter Olympics for Eurosport. And she spoke to me earlier today. She told me that she had just experienced the 30 seconds of coldest weather that she's ever experienced in her entire life. And that was just getting from the aeroplane into the terminal building. Minus 20 degrees, she told me it was, which is a 60 degree centigrade change from when she got on the plane in Sydney. So if she thinks she's getting any sympathy from me, she's mistaken. But we'll be watching her progress with interest at the Winter Olympics. That'll start in a few days' time. And she'll be on your telly. But she won't be talking tennis with us today. However, that doesn't mean we're not having a tennis podcast. We most certainly are. We're going to be having Charlie Eccleshare from The Telegraph with us from Marbella in Spain, where the Davis Cup tie between Spain and Great Britain has been taking place. But we'll also go through all the other Davis Cup ties, of course. There's been plenty of other stories as well. Novak Djokovic having his small surgery by the sounds of things. We'll be talking to Charlie about that. But first, let's get on to that tie in Marbella in Spain, because Great Britain were beaten by Spain 3-1, but it was a rather different type of tie than I think many of us were expecting. I think we should speak to the Great Britain Davis Cup captain, Leon Smith, don't you? Leon?
Lawman.
Hello, Leon. That was a heck of a tie in the end. I mean, was that more of a tie than maybe even you thought it might be?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when we knew that we were up against it with well, first of all, obviously, no Andy. We always miss Andy immensely. And then, obviously, Kyle, with a few niggles, etc., and change of surface from Australia and probably not going to make it in time. Then you realise, okay, we're going to go with the debutants and the rookies. So let's make the most out of it. And you're hoping that they have a great experience. They put up a good showing. And most importantly, learn an awful lot from it. And we got that and more. And that's all you can ask. And obviously Liam went out first and gave a very, very good account of himself. And then, of course, Cam has grabbed the headlines all weekend from what he's achieved. And he leaves here a better player, full of confidence and a significant reference point of what's possible for him moving forward.
You and I have spoken about him before, and you've told me what a decent player he already is and what a good player you think he can be. But would it be fair to say that until somebody goes out in that situation, you just don't know?
Yeah, I think it is fair, especially when you've not played a pro match on clay. You know, I think he's played four matches his entire life, including junior tennis on clay. So you come here on a heavy clay court and you play against guys 20-odd in the world. You realise that it's a big task and you don't know what to expect. I mean, and he's gone out and beaten Baptiste Agut. And also to do it from two sets breakdown is even more impressive. He has a day off and then he comes back and puts in another very, very high level match against Ramos, who we all know is one of the better clay court players in world tennis. It's an amazing story. No one had written that script, but I'm genuinely excited actually about what Cam can do moving forward from this, because it does change things for him, not in terms of his game or anything, but just his perspective on what he can do and schedule and belief. So he can go with even more focus than what he had before, which is great.
I was quite amused watching the facial expressions that TV was picking out, both of yourself and Sergio Bagheera, during those two rubbers that Cameron played. On the face of Sergio Bagheera, it looked like, who is this guy? I mean, how have I not heard of this guy? And on you, it was like a sort of fatherly pride, but a sort of almost amusement that he was just embracing it the way he was, and that it was kind of like, well, he just keeps coming back for more.
Yeah, I mean, some very nice words from Sergi after the match on Friday, and again when I shook hands with him at the end of the day, he's so impressed with Cam, and how can you not be? I mean, I was really enjoying watching him play, and yeah, I felt very proud watching him. And you know, some things that made me smile, some things that made me get very, very pumped up, and even some things that got me frustrated, because I actually knew he was in it to win it, and he just, you know, and then you're really there believing that he can win, and he made us believe, and that's such an important thing. And you know, some players when it comes to Davis Cup step up and perform over and above, and he looks like he's going to be one of those players for us, which is great to have such a young player that can be in our team, and probably even more, well, it is more important that we can have another tour player, because that's certainly something that we need and that we would love to have.
He looked very comfortable on that surface, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and he said that afterwards. I mean, you wouldn't have known. As I say, he hasn't played anything on it, so you don't know if you're good on it or not. And they've probably looked at it, and I've talked to his coaching team. They're not thinking of a long clay season, and thinking now, well, you probably should, because if you can take Ramos that close and beat Bautista Agut, you should probably think about playing on it, because even though the matches are very, very difficult on it, you can see how much it improves their game. And I've said that for a long time. I think younger players should spend enough, I'm not saying schedule all the time on it if it's not your favourite surface, but you should spend enough time on it, because it helps your whole game, and Cam will feel that now, and I'm sure that he'll spend a bit more time on it.
Just finally, Leon, what were you going to do if he'd have won it? Was Carl coming in at that point?
Yeah, obviously we chatted about that last night, this morning, and we had a pretty clear plan on that. Liam was in the loop, everyone's in the loop, that if Cam had won that, then Kyle would have gone out and played that final rubber.
Yeah, well, understandable, and blimey, he got you close. Well done this weekend. Another okay, ultimately not successful in terms of the actual result, but a pretty encouraging weekend.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So there's Leon Smith here on the Tennis Podcast, and unsurprisingly, pretty impressed with the way Cameron Norrie in particular played. Let's have a little chat to Charlie Eccleshare from The Telegraph, who has been in Marbella throughout the last few days. Charlie, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very, very well, very well. Charlie, was this your first Davis Cup tie covering for The Telegraph?
It was, yeah, and quite an introduction.
It was a bit, wasn't it? What were you expecting when you went out there? I mean, Simon Briggs obviously was in Australia for the Australian Open. It's a long old trip. A couple of the other guys went out straight on to Marbella. But I was certainly asked if I wanted to go to Marbella, and as lovely a place as it was, part of me was thinking, well, I've had enough, frankly, being on the road. And secondly, I wasn't really expecting too competitive a tie. What did you expect?
No, I mean, we arrived Wednesday night and then had the draw Thursday, and me and a couple of colleagues from other papers, we were genuinely saying, you know, if Great Britain won a set on that first day, those first two singles matches, that would be, you know, a real achievement. In fact, even just if it was three close sets in either of the match, we thought that'd be good. And when Brody did that in the first match against Ramos Vinolas, I think we thought, well, that's probably the story of the day. You know, Brody competes and only loses in three tight sets. And then Norrie goes two sets and a breakdown. And we're thinking, yep, we've got this one right. And then all of a sudden, just starts pulling off the most incredible comeback. And then we suddenly believed again. And actually, maybe that was maybe that was a bad thing, because then we were brought back down to earth on Saturday. But no, overall, it was so much more competitive and intense than we'd been anticipating. Definitely,
it was a stark contrast in terms of the atmosphere on the Friday to what it was on the Saturday and Sunday. I mean, I think probably unsurprisingly, in a way, in that, you know, Friday, I imagine, is a work day and not so many people can go. They can at the weekend. But my sense just watching on TV was that, frankly, Spain were just waiting to win in a way on Friday. I mean, is that how it felt?
Yeah, it was really flat on Friday. And actually, most of the noise was coming from the British fans, despite the fact that, you know, they were losing for the most part of that first day. And it felt, you know, the Spanish fans, as you say, were pretty relaxed, pretty reserved, just sitting back watching it unfold. And their British counterparts were making plenty of noise, but partly in a slightly gallows humoury way of, you know, we're going to win this. But then by Saturday, they wheeled out this enormous brass band, which was sat right next to us in the press seats, which got pretty annoying pretty quickly. But it did make for a much better atmosphere. It was kind of like, you know, we'll roll out the big guns to drown out the away support. And it livened it up a lot, actually. And it was sunnier on the Saturday as well. And it just a bit more vibrant. There's more colour. And the Spanish players seem to feed off that, you know, especially when you've got someone like Lopez, who's a bit of a peacock, likes that kind of thing. And it felt more like a classic Davis Cup tie, even though it was a less of a close match, actually.
Well, when you were having these sets go by on Friday and Norrie starting to get back into it, I mean, I think I probably expected him to ultimately have a kind of gallant defeat. You know, I thought it would be close, but I didn't actually think he would end up winning it. I just wonder how was that greeted? You've gone out to Marbella, and I imagine there's probably not that much enthusiasm for the tie back in your sports desk. But as the day was going on, did you sense any sort of change in interest levels as a result of what he was doing?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, the word count was just rising and rising with each set, as the desk realised that actually this was quite a big thing that was going on, you know, turning what looked like a regulation defeat into genuinely, I would say, one of the biggest upsets in British tennis history. I mean, it's easy to forget because of the way he looked so relaxed and unfazed by the whole thing, how remarkable it was. I mean, it's been trotted out, but you know, I've never played a clay court match on, or the red clay anyway, before before Friday, having only turned pro last year, having never played a match beyond three sets. So it was building and building, and then the and back home they definitely cottoned on to that, how big a thing this was.
Yeah, well, and so he wins that tie. When they came into the press conference afterwards, what was his attitude like? I mean, was it euphoric, or was it, or did you get the sense that actually this is something he almost expects of himself?
I've been amazed with him over the last few days how relaxed and phlegmatic he is about everything. You know, he doesn't, I think one of the reasons I think he really could go on and achieve big things is he seems very balanced and unflappable. You know, he obviously looked delighted. You know, he was aware of how big an achievement it was, but you know, and he said today, he was like, look, I've learned these guys, his words, they're nothing special, that they're obviously great players, but you know, he feels he can compete with them now. And I think that partly was why today he came out. And so often you see when players pull off huge upsets, they're then really flat in the next match and lose comfortably. None of that from him. You know, he made that slow start, but after that, he was bossing Ramos Vinolas around for a couple of sets. So I think that will really help him. And I think it's interesting. I just saw Judy Murray tweet about this, the fact that he had this education. You know, he went and studied in the States for a few years. And I don't know, but it seems to have helped him be a bit more balanced, a bit more relaxed, you know, than a lot of young tennis players who at that age seem very, I don't know, kind of a bit overwhelmed by the whole experience. But he didn't. And he pointed to that, actually. He said that part of the reason why he enjoyed, you know, because it was Davis Cup ties, as you know, that can be chaotic and that, you know, people are shouting mid-point and you've got brass bands bleating away and it's all sorts going on. He looked much more comfortable with that. You know, he said playing in the American collegiate system, you get a lot of that. So for him, it was kind of no big deal. Whereas Ramos Vinolas and Bautista Agut were kind of, you know, looked a bit freaked out by it.
Yes, well, I mean, although they're very good players, because of Spain's strength and depth, I mean, they haven't had that many opportunities and responsibilities to lead a team. And it's different, isn't it? And I think that's very interesting what you say about the college system. I was going to reference that Judy tweet. I'd just seen that. And I mean, he'd actually produced a little kind of video about himself, hadn't he, quite recently. And I find him, I mean, what is he, 21? And he only actually
22.
Started, 22, and he started playing properly full-time, what, a year ago? Less than a year ago?
Yeah, left in May and started soon after, so May, June.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different type of approach. And I've had some dealings with him at Queen's, and I agree with you. It's that phlegmatic element to his character that is kind of unusual. But then you are talking about somebody who has not just been thrust into this as a teenager, and it's kind of that and nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's that lack of balance, I think, for a lot of these players.
Yeah,
and I wonder if other Brits will see what he's done and think maybe that's the way to go, and not, you know, try and crack it from 16, 17. Yeah. Especially as now, and I was talking with some colleagues about this, because players are making their breakthroughs a lot later anyway. You know, gone are the days, let's say 20 years ago, maybe 22, you'd be thinking you should be winning some big tournaments by now. But that's no longer the case. No. And, you know, players are peaking early 30s. So 22 is a very sensible time to be starting, you know, not necessarily 16, 17 as it used to be.
No, people think that they've got time on their side, don't they?
Yeah.
I wanted to know, what was Friday night like? Because I was watching this this rubber which he won, and I was seeing some of the tweets from our colleagues, you know, people that you were out there with, and I was thinking, crikey, I can just imagine some massive bender amongst all the British media tonight.
not quite. A few drinks down by the beach, which is very pleasant.
Lovely.
Definitely a kind of jubilant mood. I think from that point on amongst us, it was kind of like we were playing with house money, because it had already exceeded our expectations after the first day. You know, we'd come out there in hope more than expectation. And then here it was, this great story landing in our laps straight off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I mean, in some ways, it was a disappointment from a British perspective, wasn't it, that Murray and Inglot didn't have a good day?
Yeah, it was quite awkward watching that, I felt. Inglot, just we've all been there. You know, anyone who's played club doubles has been both the one who's been the slightly better player or the slightly worse. And it is, it's difficult. And you could see Jamie was trying to keep him, stay positive and keep him going. But there was a period, I think it was the second set, where he was, you know, butchering volleys. He couldn't hit a ground stroke. And it just got away from him a bit. And Leon said it after. He was like, it's one thing losing, but to not even have any moments of drama or excitement in a Davis Cup doubles tie is really rare. And it was a bit of a letdown, I think.
So, I mean, when you were coming into the final day, there was obviously that decision to be made, wasn't there? Because the rules have been changed to allow the fifth player who hasn't been selected as part of the four to come in, which in this case would have been Kyle Edmund. Was it clear immediately, really, that the way they were going to go was to sort of see if the tie was still alive before pitching Edmund in? Or was were any of you thinking that maybe he might have played the fourth one to try to keep it alive?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't think that based on anything Leon said, because he was quite... I mean, he made it pretty obvious yesterday that Kyle was going to play if it went to a fifth rubber. But we did have that discussion about whether to put him in on the fourth. The difficulty there obviously would mean dropping Norrie, and then you've got Brody coming in for the fifth one. It was slightly unfortunate that that was the way round it was, that you couldn't play both Edmund and Norrie without... that you couldn't do it, so Edmund came in first and played the fourth rubber.
Yes.
But you know, but that was the way it was. So I mean, it was we were anticipating Edmund would have played the fifth, but yeah, he never got there. I mean, it sounded like he was Friday just came a little bit too soon for him after that Australian Open run.
Yes, yeah. Well, anyway, it was. I mean, well done Spain in the end, because I felt, considering what they were having to deal with, they did quite well. I was quite surprised in a way that David Ferrer wasn't pitched in today.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he would have been for that fifth one, but that's kind of what I was expecting. I thought him and Pablo Carreño Busta would end up getting the nod.
Especially because Carreño Busta played so well in the doubles. I thought he was such a cut above. You know, he looked by far the best player on the court, I thought.
Yeah, so it's a relegation playoff now, isn't it? Or a world group playoff, isn't it, to try to stay in the world group? And that'll be in September?
In September, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well.
Which you'd think, you know, looking at it, because it will be seeded, so Britain will be seeded high. And from the look of the potential opponents, I mean, there's a lot of variables there, but you'd expect Britain would be favourites, almost whoever they play. But yeah, it's always about who's available and that sort of thing. But
I mean, if you think about it, if you'd have said that 3 or 4 days ago, when you kind of got Edmund and a doubles team and you're trying to find another player before you knew about Cameron Norrie, and obviously the fact that Andy Murray's injured and probably not expected to be available, that is a pretty strong position suddenly in terms of how it feels, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that was the thrust of my piece today, that this turnaround over the last few days, or certainly over the last month, if you think early Jan and Murray pulls out of Australian Open and we're thinking he's never going to get his hip sorted, and at this point, you know, Edmund hasn't done a huge amount, and then a month on, Edmund's had this amazing run to the Australian Open semi, Norrie's announced himself, maybe Murray will come back, and then you're thinking a Davis Cup team with Norrie, Edmund and the Murray brothers is pretty handy.
Yeah, you are. So that's the British team, and they will now go on. And I mean, just as a final note, and I can say this now, he's not on the show anymore at the moment, Charlie. But I mean, he's some captain, isn't he, Leon Smith? I mean, if you consider, what is it? I was thinking about it. It's 2010 when he played his or captained his first tie. I think it was against Turkey in Eastbourne. I was there at that, and defeat would have sent Britain down to Euro African Zone 3, which they've never been in before. And here they are. I mean, there's been countless years in a row in the World Group. They've won the Davis Cup. Obviously, having an Andy Murray, that is what ultimately won the Davis Cup for Britain, allied to a couple of great performances from James Ward and a good doubles team as well. But, you know, to just have produced the sort of results that got them into the World Group in the first place without Andy Murray, and now sort of still being competitive without Andy Murray, I mean, he really does know what he's doing, that guy.
I mean, yeah, I think I tweeted on Friday saying basically that I wonder if, because of Andy Murray's heroics in that 2015 run, we slightly underestimate just how good a job Leon Smith's done, because it's amazing the way he gets players, and we've seen it so many times. We've had Dan Evans, we've had James Ward, we've had Kyle Edmund, now Cameron Norrie, believing that they can beat players who are ranked so much higher than them. Not just believing it, but then doing it, is the essence of great management. I mean, he's such a great man manager. You can see it the way the players feed off him. And I think, I think maybe we don't fully appreciate just how brilliant he's been.
No, and actually, that takes me on to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. A few of the other ties that have been played over the course of this weekend. One of those was the United States winning away 3-0 in Serbia. Now, this was a Serbia without Novak Djokovic. It was without Viktor Troicki. You know, it was shorn of its best players. Although Dusan Lajovic is a very good clay court player, and John Isner beat him in five sets. I mean, that's a very good win. And they won 3-0, so they won it with time to spare. They didn't have a Bryan brothers anymore. It was Ryan Harrison and Steve Johnson, pairing up for the doubles. But the reason aside from just wanting to talk about the result, their captain, Jim Courier, has been going for pretty much the same amount of time as Leon Smith. He took over in late 2010. And the best they've had so far is one semi-final. Now, I mean, Jim Courier was one of the great Davis Cup players. I don't think I'll ever forget what he did in Birmingham in 1999.
I was there as a kid.
Were you?
Yeah, and it was, unbelievable,
I mean, if you weren't aware of that, I was looking it up today. Because I was there too. He beat Tim Henman, I think, 8-6 in the fifth. And this is a Jim Courier that was well past his best. And then this is when Henman and Rozetsky were at their peak. He beat Henman 8-6 in the fifth. He then, or 7-5 in the fifth. He then beat Rozetsky 9-7 in the fifth to win the tie on the final day. A quite staggering achievement. He also helped the United States. He won the decisive rubber in 1992 to help them beat Switzerland. But as a captain, so far, I mean, it's included two defeats against Britain, one on home soil as well. And like I say, they have not got an Andy Murray in their team. They've got John Isner, who's a good, a good kind of contributor. They've had Jack Sock. They've got Sam Querrey. They've had a world-class doubles team in the Bryan brothers for many years. But, it shows, doesn't it? There's a comparison right there that so far, Courier, as great as he was as a player, hasn't been able to pull out the sort of performances from the team, maybe, that Leon Smith has been able to.
Yeah, I know. It's so impressive as well, the fact that so much of tennis, the respect is based on what coaches have done as a player, the kind of advent of the super coach era. And that someone like Leon, who doesn't have a huge pedigree, nothing like someone like Courier, clearly, is able to command so much respect and admiration from all his players. And it's not just the States, so many other countries just can't seem to just get that formula that Leon's managed. He's made the Davis Cup a really aspirational thing to be a part of. It's not a sort of, I have to go and do that. It's not an obligation. It's something fun. And Kyle Edmund going along this week, how easy would that have been for him? In many ways, he probably shouldn't have gone. And, in a lot of countries, he definitely wouldn't. But he wanted to be a part of it. He said it's such a good atmosphere that he didn't want to miss it.
No.
To have done that is just brilliant, by the way.
It is. So the United States, they're through to the quarterfinals. They play Belgium now. I mean, it kind of feels like Belgium deserved to win it one of these days after losing it twice in the final. Goffin helping them through to the quarters. But that will be in the United States. I just wonder whether maybe this might be the States' chance to do something big, because they're also in their half of the group is Kazakhstan and Croatia, who Kazakhstan winning today 4-1 against Switzerland, who were well shorn of their best players, no Federer and no Wawrinka. And then Croatia beating Canada. That's a good win at home on clay, a Canada that included Pospisil and Shapovalov. And Cilic actually playing just the doubles, but helping them come from behind to win an extraordinary doubles, I think, from two sets to love down. Borna Coric doing very well. So I don't know. What do you think? Who would you expect to end up in the final out of quarterfinals that are pitching Kazakhstan against Croatia, winner of that to meet the United States and Belgium?
That's a difficult one. I mean, you'd say there it's going to be, probably a Croatia-US semi. And then from there, I guess that slightly depends who would be at home. I'm trying to think who that would be. I'd probably pick Croatia there, to be honest.
Cilic is head and shoulders above.
That's the thing. I think the format does mean if you've got a star player like that, the fact they can play all three rubbers does just give you a massive, I mean, like the Andy Murray 2015 model.
Yeah.
Gives you a massive advantage. I mean, I feel as well France, just looking at the other half, might be a bit liberated by finally winning it last year.
Yeah, you might be right.
And I wonder if they, you know, that monkey off their back, they could go all the way again.
Yeah, they won 3-1 at home. I saw Adrian Mannarino just struggling to get over the line, and he eventually did. They play in the quarterfinals Italy. A word on Fabio Fognini, who has gone to Japan over this weekend. Now, I mean, some of his behaviour at times is appalling. And a few times in this match, it was questionable. But he played 14 sets in 3 days. And he won 2 5-setters and doubles and helped Italy to win that 3-1. I mean, it's a heck of an achievement, that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, all three matches were longer than 3 hours, I think, weren't they?
Yeah.
And the more I thought about it this week, the more sort of just strengthen my view. Some players just seem cut out for this type of tennis. And he's talking about Lopez being a peacock. You know, Fognini is kind of on another level in that regard.
He sure is, yeah.
The peacock turned all peacock. But he, it feels like he thrives in that atmosphere, that environment. Remember him beating Murray in straight sets in a singles match 4 years
yes.
ago and in Davis Cup. That takes a heck of a lot of doing. As you say, he's a divisive character, as Fognini. But, amazing commitment. And, I felt that with... And I saw you tweeted it, and I'd had the exact same thought about Norrie, just going back to him. You know, he's someone who just seemed cut out for it.
Yes, some people you just look like... I mean, and actually, some people end up being better players in Davis Cup than they ever manage in the regular tour. I was thinking back to the... Remember that... Is it Northern Irish... footballer David Healy, who used
yes,
to score countless goals for Ireland, and
never do it at club level. Yeah.
No, and that just it just happens like that sometimes, doesn't it?
Completely. And I thought there was a little bit of the reverse of that with certainly Bautista Agu on Friday, and I was thinking, in a way, that makes sense because he's someone whose high ranking is not based on kind of exciting 5-set wins in big. You know, big occasions. It's built on grinding consistency, reaching quarters and semis of a number of events over the course of a year. And so maybe, you know, when you're trying to explain how an upset can happen, you wonder if someone like him, who's also not exactly a flamboyant character, and someone who likes just kind of metronomic consistency, maybe wasn't so suited to the kind of chaos of the Davis Cup.
Yes.
That someone like Norrie or someone like Fognini seems to be. It's not for everyone, clearly.
No, he did look a little bit, oh, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, and I thought there was some of that with Ramos Fernandez today as well. He was getting very agitated. I mean, honestly, I think if he could, he would have told the brass band to shut up. He's like, let me concentrate on my inside out forehand. You know, stop distracting me with this nonsense. Whereas some players love it. And yes. I mean, you think as well, you talk to any tennis player, they'll say from, let's say, about 20 to 200 in the world, on their day, anyone can beat anyone. And when you put them in this environment where, you know, they can get such a lift from the crowd, that's why you get these crazy upsets. I mean, what was it? De Backer beating Mannarino, and he's ranked 300 and something in the world, 369 in the world. And you just think only in the Davis Cup, only in this kind of frenzied atmosphere can that happen.
Yes, yes. And actually on that subject, the other result that we have to touch on is the win for Germany in Australia. I mean, I think this is an incredible result. I think I picked Charlie Australia to win the Davis Cup. So I'm not best pleased about this. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, hats off to Alexander Zverev in particular because he is somebody who I think, question marks, I think it's harsh in a way because he's only 20, but question marks have been raised because he hasn't been winning 5-set matches. He hasn't got to a slam quarter yet. But here he is going to Australia, beating Alex de Minaur in a five-setter. I mean, and that kid can fight. I mean, I know he's new and he's young and he's fresh, but Zverev got himself through that. And then to beat Kyrgios 6-2, 7-6, 6-2 in Kyrgios's, well, on the same site that Kyrgios won the Brisbane tournament, it was held on the same court, and he beat him, thrashed him really in straight sets, a guy who had won three of their four previous meetings Kyrgios had. I think that's a heck of an achievement, and it could be the making of Zverev that.
Yeah, definitely. And you saw this stat, that's the first time Zverev has beaten a top 50 player in a best of five set match, which is extraordinary, you know, and kind of speaks to his terrible Grand Slam record. But yeah, maybe that is the, you know, he needed that boost. He needed that self-belief, because I think there was a lot of disappointment at the Australian Open the way he went out to Chung. I mean, getting bageled in that final set, he won 5 points in the final set. He was the fourth seed. You know, that is just no way to exit a Grand Slam tournament. So yeah, credit to him for sticking out there. And putting off a great win against class opponent.
He's shown what he's made of there, and that it's in there. And I would have thought he'll be able to draw in that. I was thinking back, you know, to when Federer, I think he'd already won Wimbledon by then, and he played against Leighton Hewitt in Australia, and he was leading, I think, 2-2, and he ended up losing to Hewitt in 5, and it really hurt him at the time. But you know, he didn't shrivel in that. He ended up coming back and dominating the head to head with Leighton Hewitt thereafter, and I think that's a major result for Alexander Zverev. A couple of other talking points just before we send you on your way to go and get a nice dinner, Charlie, because you've earned it over the last few days. A word on the first of all, what we've heard this week is, I think it was a minor or a small medical intervention Novak Djokovic has called something that he's had done to his elbow, which is obviously some kind of surgery. I mean, I think after the Australian Open, it was obvious. It had a very similar feel to Andy Murray, didn't it? That you know, you've tried your rehab. It's now time to get this sorted another way.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of slightly frustratingly cryptic, because he doesn't actually, in that Instagram post that you referred to, he doesn't give any details. Yeah, he says, "I accepted to do a small medical intervention on my elbow." But he doesn't give any real detail on that, or what the procedure was, or when he'll be back. But yeah, I think, similarly with Murray after that Wimbledon loss, yeah, he realised this isn't right, which I think came as a big surprise. I think people weren't expecting anything from Murray this January. You know, there were a lot of whispers about how injured he was, whereas it seemed like Djokovic was much further ahead with his recovery. And I don't know how surprised he was by how much it's still bothering him. I don't know if he thought the worst was over, but it's clearly not right. And I think it'll be interesting now to see how long he does take off. You know, when we'll next see him.
Yeah. I think most of us will. It doesn't really matter how long it takes. They've just got to get it right, these two, now, so that they can hopefully be competitive and fully fit and healthy and not talking about injuries for the next however many years they decide they want to play the sport. Talking about other people that have come back, a much better news story of Kei Nishikori, who, quite a bizarre announcement before the Australian Open that he's pulling out of the Australian Open. However, he's playing a challenger the week afterwards, which I mean, at the time was like, what? But yeah, you know, he'd clearly decided I'm not ready for that level of battle over best of five sets, and he's gone and won the challenger.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to him. It's highly unconventional. I can't really think of a comparison. And you know, he's still ranked, I think, the top 30 in the world. But he obviously thought this was what he needed to get competitive again, and almost wanted to ease himself back in. And actually, you know, it wouldn't have been a surprise if he'd struggled. You know, you're still playing tough opponents who have a huge incentive to try and beat you. You know, a guy who was number four in the world less than a year ago. Bigger challenges await. And again, you know, like with Djokovic, we just wait and see how recovered he is, especially for Nishikori with it being the wrist. We've seen that with Del Potro and Laura Robson and others. You do wonder, you do worry for players when they pick up that injury.
You do. Well, let's hope they're all fully fit very soon and can carry on the circuit. We will just very quickly mention the other two tournaments that I'm aware of taken place this week. St. Petersburg on the WTA side, a great win for Petra Kvitova, who thrashed Yelena Ostapenko for the loss of two games along the way, and she ended up winning the tournament. We also had victory for Tamer Babos, who won the tournament in Taipei. I like this one, Charlie, just briefly. Both Babos and Mladenovic, who were doubles partners in Australia and actually won the title there, and Mladenovic, who'd had a terrible time of it, 15 losses in a row she lost in singles, ended up reaching the final straight after having won that doubles. And it just goes to show, doesn't it, feel good factor can make a big difference, because Babos ended up winning a title after winning the doubles in Australia, and her doubles partner reached the final.
I know, yeah, what I was thinking about Mladenovic, what a relief that must have been.
Yeah.
And also, it's impressive that when you have such a losing mentality, you are still able to win doubles matches, that it doesn't just kind of seep into it. And I think it might affect you even worse if you were playing doubles and it was getting away from you and you felt like you were responsible. So, but yeah, no, it seems like some good therapy for her singles game.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's just a heck of a relief, you know, to have some company out on the court, a little bit like Davis Cup sometimes can be.
Yeah.
So there we are. It's been a cracking week, certainly a few days, particularly for you. Did you like Marbella?
Yeah, I did very much. Especially, I've had a lot of messages telling me how freezing cold it is back home. So
yes, it is.
That's
I can guarantee
you feel even smugger.
So back home tomorrow. Nice dinner, hopefully, for you tonight. Thank you for joining us here on the Tennis Podcast. Always a pleasure to have you.
Cheers. Yeah, it was a pleasure to be on.
Excellent. And we will be back next week. Of course, we did promise you this week that we were bringing you our listener questions first installment here on the Tennis Podcast. Well, so much happened this weekend that we thought we better do things a little differently. So we'll be back with that next week, Catherine and myself, answering your questions. It's a show we've already done, and it's edited by our guest editor, Jim Boyle. We'll have another one of those with Grace Onions the week after that. Loads of talking points that Catherine and I got our teeth stuck into. Do make sure you watch her on Eurosport. She'll be covering the Winter Olympics throughout the next few weeks. And we will be back next week with the Tennis Podcast. We want to say thank you, of course, to our executive producers, Melanie Bowes, who's our predictions champion, although something tells me that Catherine Whittaker had a rather good couple of weeks in the Australian Open and the predictions front, which really irritates me enormously. We want to say thanks to tennisballs.com and, of course, Triple S and our mascot, Charlie the Ferret, our sponsors, La Manga Club, who are responsible for producing the game that Catherine Whittaker reckons she's going to beat me in our rematch in a few weeks' time when she finally gets back from Korea. But that's not going to happen because Jill Krabas is giving me all sorts of tips and I'm going to be ready for her. We will be back with another tennis podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph very soon. See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.